Now, there are two distinct elements of culture. One is our explicit, overt, or surface culture. It's visible, it's easily described. Some examples would be our customs, our holidays, our laws, dress, food and diet, our art and music. When we go to a multicultural festival, what do? We eat, we drink, we dance. Oftentimes, we think that that's what culture is. But a far more important part of culture is our implicit, covert culture. It's not visible. It's difficult to describe. We take it for granted because it is beyond our conscious awareness. So, for instance, when you drove here today and you came to a red light, you stopped. You didn't think, oh, the light is red, I should stop. It was an automatic, unconscious response. Some examples of our implicit covert culture include our beliefs, our values, our attitudes, how we use time and space, our rules for interpersonal relationships, the rules which govern our language. What culture really looks like is an iceberg. Only 10 to 20% of an iceberg is above the waterline. 80 to 90% is below the waterline. So that objective surface level of culture, which includes our artifacts, our food, clothing, art, and music, is just the tip of the iceberg. What's underneath the iceberg is our subjective culture. It's the deep dimension of culture. It's implicitly learned. It's very difficult to change because it is at the unconscious level. So many times, when we have difficulties with other groups or other cultures, it's because we are looking at only the surface culture. We're not understanding their deep culture. We are making value judgments based on what an action would mean if we did it, when in their culture, it doesn't have that meaning at all. Let me give you an example. I have frequently done teacher training in the Dominican Republic. And the one village I have worked in, I know that no matter what time I start my class, and it's a given, it will start late. Okay? But no matter what time I start, my friend Rosario will arrive an hour to an hour and a half late. Now, when we are late for something, our normal modus operandi is to sneak in the back and quietly find a seat. We absolutely hate it when we go to church and the only seats empty are up front and we're late. But my friend Rosario enters the room. I'm in the middle of speaking, and she's like, hola, ¿cómo están ustedes? Yo estaba cocinando. Tuve muchas cosas hacer en mi casa. ¿Cómo estás? ¿Cómo estás? ¿Cómo estás? And she has to greet every person in the room. Now, if I judged her behavior by what it would mean if I did it, I would say, how rude. But I know that in her culture, to enter a room and not greet people is the height of rudeness. So the same action has multiple meanings depending on what's underneath the iceberg. Some important functions of culture are that it does bind people together. It makes the behavior of others fairly predictable, and it largely determines the meaning we give to the outside world. Those of us who live in the United States have a sense of personal space. We have a sense of bigness because our country is so big. When I was living on the island of St. Lucia in the Eastern Caribbean, which is only 28 miles long and 14 miles wide, I was asked one summer when I was coming home if I would take a package back to somebody's Aunt Mary. Now, this was another teacher that I worked with, and this was like 30 years ago. So we didn't have the internet access. There wasn't a lot of information available to people. And she said to me, would you take this package with you to America? Because that's where my aunt lives. And I said, well, you know, America's a very big place. The United States is a large country. Where does your Aunt Mary live? Well, she lives in Brooklyn. I said, do you have an address? She said she lives in the big white house on the corner. Now, that was enough of a definition if I were coming to St. Lucia. The opposite side of that is one of our sisters was on her way back from Africa and decided to come through St. Lucia to visit us. And she had no idea where we were in St. Lucia, but she had worked in many developing countries, and she knew that at the airport they would know exactly where we lived. So she got to the airport, she got in a taxi, and sure enough, arrived at our house. I opened the door, and there stands Kateri. And I said, "Kateri, what are you doing here?" She said, "Well, I just thought I'd stop in for a visit." So her knowledge of local cultures and the understanding that strangers would stand out enabled her to find us very easily. The reverse of that was my friend, who had lived on the island all her life and did not know much about the outside world, just thought that everybody could find a direction simply by saying what color the house was and on what corner it was. A woman by the name of Ruby Payne has given us some real insights into how the hidden values, those are the values that are underneath the iceberg, okay, the waterline, how hidden values impact socioeconomic classes. And so she talks about the lower socioeconomic group, and she says that the three key values of people who live in a lower socioeconomic group are survival, relationships, and entertainment. And I didn't learn this till many years after I had worked in a developing country, and could certainly ascertain that what she was saying was very true, because I had seen it myself. Relationships are key. One of the reasons people often don't show up on time for something is something else happens in their families or their communities, and that always takes precedence over time. In terms of entertainment, I have worked with many migrant groups, and oftentimes when someone receives a paycheck, they don't go to the bank and put it in the bank. They share it with their neighbors with a feast or a dance. Okay. In the middle socioeconomic group, the primary values are work, achievement, and material security. So having a bank account is important. Okay. Going to school, getting an education, that's important. Having a good job. We frequently define ourselves by the work that we do. What is one of the first questions we frequently ask of each other? What do you do? These are very different values. And if these are the values we are operating out of, we're not going to spend money on a party, we're going to put it in the bank. Relationships, notice, are not key here. It's not that we don't have relationships, it's just that they don't take the primary role that they do in the lower socioeconomic class. In the upper class, political, financial, and social connections are key. Who do you know? That's how you get things done. So while all these people may be living in the same society, such as here in the United States, what's underneath the iceberg, what's underneath the waterline, is what motivates our behavior. So if relationships, survival, and entertainment are motivating our behavior, we're going to behave very differently from those in the middle or upper socioeconomic classes. We frequently hear people in the lower economic situation criticized for buying a large screen TV when they don't have enough money for food. And yet, what's really key there is to understand that they bought that both for entertainment and for relationships. They invite their friends to come. They share it. Now, we may not understand why they are doing something, but we need to understand that the values out of which they are operating are as important to them as our values are to us. And we need to do so without making judgments.